Bhutai Panchipi Arabdair. Yoshit Purusha Evahi. Toyovya Vayat Sambutir. Yoshit Purushasyo Iha. Bhutai by the material elements. Panchabi, five. Arabdai, developed. Yoshit, women. Purusha, man. Eva, just so. He, certainly. Tayo, of them. Vivayat, by sexual life. Sambhuti, the further creation. Yoshit, of women. Purusha, Purushayo, and of men. Iha, in this world. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swameshwara Prabhupada. The creation of the material world begins with the five elements, and thus everything, including the body of a man or a woman, is created of these elements. By the sexual life of man and woman, the number of men and women in this material world is further increased. Translation responsibly. The creation of the material world.
The creation of the material world
begins with the five elements.
Begins with the five elements.
And thus everything.
And thus everything.
Including the body of a man or a woman.
Including the body of a man or a woman.
Is created by these elements.
Is created by these elements.
By the sexual life of man and woman.
By the sexual life of man and woman.
The number of men and women in this material world.
The number of men and women in this material world.
Is further increased. When Swayambhuva Manu saw that Dhruva Maharaj understood the philosophy of Vaishnavism and yet was still dissatisfied because of his brother's death, he gave him an explanation of how this material body is created by the five elements of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also confirmed, Prakriti Kriyamanani, everything is created, maintained, and annihilated by the material modes of nature. Mayadhyakshena. In the ninth chapter, Krishna says, under my superintendence, material nature is acting. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to impress on Dhruva Maharaj that the death of the material body and of his brother was not actually the Yaksha's fault. It was an act of the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has immense varieties of potencies, and they act in different gross and subtle ways. It is by such powerful potencies that the universe is created, although grossly, it appears to be no more than the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Similarly, the bodies of all species of living entities, whether human beings or demigods, animals or birds, are also created by the same five elements. And by sexual union, they expand into more and more living entities. That is the way of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. One should not be disturbed by the waves of material nature in this process. Dhruva Maharaj was indirectly advised not to be affected by the death of his brother, because our relationship with the body is completely material. The real self, spirit soul, is never annihilated or killed by anyone. Namagyan timadandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurin munitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swabhadantikam vancha kalpatu rupyascha kripa sindhu bi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in this pastime, Dhruva Maharaj has lost control of his anger. And because he lost control of his anger, then he killed so many of the yakshas. This takes place when we're not controlled, when we don't have control of our urges, our senses and our mind. As we said last time I gave class on this section, Rupa Goswami says spiritual life begins when you have control of your senses. If you don't have control of the vegans, the different urges, then it's very difficult to progress in spiritual life. You can make progress. Everyone can make progress. Just like we go out and we do Harinam Sankirtan and we're chanting on the streets and people hear the holy name. But while they're hearing the holy name, we're going past in the cafe. So they're eating a hamburger or drinking a beer, doing so many sinful activities. But still they get benefit, they get purified. But their progress is very slow. Because until you give up the unwanted habits, you can't make fast progress in devotional service. That's why when we take initiation in ISKCON, we say we'll do one thing, because our philosophy is all based on one instruction, or two instructions. Always, very dramatic, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So all the injunctions in the Shastra are based on these two things. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. So when we take initiation in ISKCON, we promise that we'll do one thing, which will assist us in always remembering Krishna. And we'll chant a minimum of 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. If you do that properly, if you do that attentively, if you do that with devotion, you will make rapid advances in Krishna consciousness. But if you try to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we promise we'll do one thing, which will help us remember Krishna, but there's four things that we vow that we will not do, because if you do those things, it will make you forget Krishna. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So if there's certain things that if we do, it will make us forget Krishna. So therefore, for your chanting to be effective, then you have to abstain from those four things. Eating meat, having illicit sex, taking intoxication, and gambling. If we engage in those four things, then it will make us forget Krishna. So therefore, those things have to be avoided and certain things have to be accepted in spiritual life to make it progressive. Otherwise, everyone will advance. Even if you're doing those four things. People who come to this temple, they're doing those four things. But they're also chanting, so they're making progress, but the progress is limited. Because it means that just like you are rowing the boat, but you don't take the anchor out of the water. So how far do you get? You may not get anywhere. Or it'll be very slow, the moving. So certain things you have to give up. So Rupa Goswami says, spiritual life begins when you give up six things. And it's interesting because Rupa Goswami could have chosen many things. There are many different things that he could have focused on, but he chose, in the essence, Upadeshamrita. What does Upadeshamrita mean? Upadesh. Upadesh means instruction. Yaridaka Tarika Krishna Upadesh. The one verse there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Amara, a guru, Tare Desh. Upadesh. Means Krishna, in the instructions of Krishna. This place where we're preaching is called Prabhudatta Desh. Prabhudatta Desh. It means it's given by the guru, by your authorities. You're in this place, make everyone in this area Krishna conscious. Wherever you go. Guru might send you one place and then he may say, okay, now go another place. But wherever you go, you're responsibility, your duty, is to make everyone in that area Krishna conscious. Give them Krishna Upadesh. Give them Krishna's instructions. So, wherever you go, wherever you meet. So then Rupa Goswami, Upadesh Amrita. Amrita means, we say nectar. It means Mrita. Mrita means death. Amrita means without death. Nectar is something that you take that stops you from dying. So it means something very powerful. Upadesh. So this Upadesh, Sri Upadesh, these auspicious instructions, they will stop you from dying. It means you will not have to take birth again. So the Rupa Goswami says these are the first six things that you have to follow. And he picks out six things, and he says these are integral to spiritual life. Spiritual life begins when you begin to follow these six things. You have to have control of the urges. Which urges? Your speech, your mind, your anger, your tongue, your belly, your genitals. You have to have control of these six. If you don't have control, your spiritual progress will be slow. Vacho, what you speak. Because even devotees get together and tend to gossip. Speak about so many things. When you're with devotees, you should speak about things which are related to Krishna. Otherwise, you get together with the devotees and it just becomes mundane discussion. It doesn't elevate the consciousness. The consciousness stays very base, materialistic. So therefore, purify the speech. Things related to Krishna. Manasa krota. You have to control your mind, the urges of the mind. What does the mind want to do? Accept and reject. Right? That's all. My Guru Maharaj said to me one time, he said, who cares what you want? He said to me, why do you want to do this? It was a spiritual thing. It wasn't a material thing. It was a spiritual thing. But he said, why do you want to do this? I said, because of this, this, and this. He said, who cares what you want? Because if you're just listening to your mind, how do we control the mind? How do we overcome the mind? You have to listen to the instructions of Guru, Sattva, and Shastra. That's how you overcome the mind. Otherwise, the mind will control you. The mind will dictate. So how do you overcome the mind? You have to absorb yourself. What does your guru want you to do? Don't listen to your mind, listen to your guru's instructions. Don't listen to your mind, listen to the sattvas. Don't listen to your mind, listen to Shastra. What does Shastra dictate? Your mind says, I want to go and do this. Shastra says, better you do not. Just like you see a big bucket of gulab jamuns. So what does your mind say? Your mind says, eat 72 of them. But then what does Shastra say? Overeating is an impediment to spiritual progress. Okay, you can eat, you can enjoy it, but the next day your japa may not be so good. Right? Because you'll be very, very hard. Back in the old days, we used to have they call like gulab eating competitions. Do you have? Yeah. We had here in 96 we had we did twice. We had like big gathering, all the Prabhupada disciples came. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was the 92 one. So 92 we had big like reunion, all the Prabhupada disciples came. And His Holiness, Sridhar Swami, he's passed away now. But he was here. And they had a gulab jamun eating contest out there in the courtyard. After the feast, they had feast and then there, and everyone sat down and you had to eat the gulabs, as many as you can. So I wasn't there, I had to go, there was some preaching program. I would have won otherwise. But I wasn't there. So anyway, Sridhar Swami, he won. He ate like 36 gulabs. You can see there's a video. Yeah. He won. But Mara is a little bit older. You know, I would have beaten him because I'm young, but I wasn't there. But, you know, Mara's a bit older. So, next morning, after Mangalati, he came Mangalati, then he went up to the room. And then out to Krishna Prabhu, me and him were brahmacharis. He went up to see Mara. Mara, do you need anything? And he said, bitter lemon. Bitter lemon. Go and buy bitter lemon. So he got some bottles of bitter lemon because he had so much gulab jamun, so much sugar, so much sweet, and it throws out the doshas in the body. That he was like, oh man, trying to chant each other, get bitter. So he bought bitter lemon and then he drank like 2 liters to counteract the sweetness. So the point is, you know, all of us, we like to do that. We like to overeat. But if you do it, then very difficult for you to progress in spiritual life. You can do it once in a while. Once in a while is okay. Prabhupada said, once a week you can have a feast. Prabhupada said that. Once a week you can have a feast. In the Melbourne Temple, we have a feast 7 times a day. Every time you turn up for prasadam, it's like a feast. But actually, devotees should eat simply. That's the system. And then you will have control of your... So he says, mind. You have to control the mind. You have to control anger. And this is what's happened. This whole pastime is based on this. And this shows how important it is to control these things, because even Dhruva Maharaj, who is a pure devotee, became overcome by anger because his brother was killed, and then he became so angry, he destroyed thousands of yakshas. So now Swayambhuv Manu, who is his... What's the relationship? Swayambhuv Manu to Dhruva Maharaj, he's the grandfather. Right? So the grandfather is coming. And just say, hey, Shanti, Shanti. Just relax. Stop killing all of these yakshas. Just control your anger. Because when you get angry, you commit offenses. That's why you must control it. It's all right to feel anger, but you must control it. That's the point. Don't let these things overcome you. All of us get angry, that's okay. There's no problem. Anger is an emotion, but you must control it. Because if you let it come out as your speech and your actions, you will commit offenses. You have to be careful amongst the devotees. You have to learn to control it. And say, you know, sometimes you have to correct a devotee. It's like, Prabhu, come here. Right? This is not good. Right? But it has to be controlled. Otherwise, you know, don't just come and just explode on there. Otherwise, you commit offenses. And then your spiritual life has problems. Right? So therefore, as it's being said here, Dhruva Maharaj, he lost control. And he's a pure devotee. Why is the Bhagavatam pointing out this pastime? To teach us how we must control. these urges, because otherwise they'll disturb your spiritual life. So the speech, your mind, your anger, and then the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. Difficult in modern society, because whole modern society is based on this. Right? Satisfy the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. You'll see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the most difficult of all the senses to control is the Sharira Vijaja Chodendriya Teka Jivifere Vishaya Sagari. He says the senses, they drag you down. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita. Lust, anger, and greed are the three gateways to hell. Hands up if you want to go to hell. It's easy to get there. It is. It's not hard to get to hell. Right? Just lust, anger, and greed. They will take you there. If you just follow those gateways, you just go through those gateways, lust, anger, and greed, you will get to hell, no problem. Your life will become hellish. You don't have to go to, like, Hatala Loka. That will happen later, but you will be in hell, your consciousness, your mind. And you see all around the world, there's hell all over the earth right now. I've seen it. I've been to Africa and places like this. I've seen where people, they're living in hell. Horrible situations. Why? Because of their lust, their anger, and their greed. It takes you there. So therefore, when we sing this song, before we take prasadam, Sharira Vijayam, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says within that song, he said, the tongue is the hardest of the senses to control. Very difficult to control the tongue. But if you can control the tongue, then it'll be so much easier to progress in spiritual life. You have to control what you eat. You have to control what you eat. And it is difficult in this temple, to be frank and honest. It is difficult because there's so much opulence being offered. Leela Dargupta, who won cavalry rides from Vrindavan, his father treated Prabhupada, Narottama Gupta. Prabhupada was Prabhupada's Ayurvedic doctor, his father. Leela Dargupta. So he's in Vrindavan. I saw him last year. So he came here to the Melbourne temple and he actually said, the prasadam is so opulent here, it's hard to control your senses. And he said, if devotees eat opulent, they'll reduce their lifespan by 10 years. You have to eat simple. And it's hard when there's all opulent prasadam around, but you have to eat simple. Now, control the tongue. What does controlling the tongue mean? You eat the same amount, right, at the same time every day. That's control. Not like, oh, I see some nice things, so I just eat more and more and more. No, you have to have control. And then the belly will become controlled, and then it will be easy to control the genitals. People find it hard to control the genitals. Sex desire is very powerful, especially in modern society, because there's so much lust in the ether. The vibration in Kali Yuga, there's so much lust in the... I don't know, has anyone been to Paris? In France? Perhaps, you've been to France. Yeah. I went there maybe 20 years ago or something. And then, I don't know, this is my impression. It's so lusty, that place. Walking around, a lot of prostitutes, but it's not like hidden there, it's just like kind of everywhere and just very lusty and I don't know. I mean, everywhere is like that in the earth during Kali Yuga, but it just seemed even more. So there's so much in the ether. It's like there's so much lust in the ether. So then it becomes very hard for people to control their genitals. But if you don't control your tongue, your belly, your genitals, it's hard to progress in spiritual life. So here, see here, Dhruva Maharaj, it was difficult for him, you know, because he got too angry, he killed so many yakshas, and then there's a danger, because he was not controlling his anger, even though he's a pure devotee, he may be committing a great offense. Okay, his brother was killed, he can kill the person who killed his brother. That's okay, that's in the Shastra. But then when you wipe out the whole race, Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather came and said, okay, just relax a little bit. Yeah, this is maybe not so good. So here, it is necessary, in spiritual life, you have to control these things. If you want to make progress in spiritual life, you have to control. So the first three verses of the Upadeshamrita, what are they? Right, control your vegans, control your urges. Second verse is six things that you have to avoid. They're obstacles in devotional service. And third thing is six things which are favorable to your bhakti. These first three verses, they are the secret of success in our devotional service, in our sadhana. If you want to be successful in your sadhana, you have to follow those first three verses very carefully. That's why Rupa Goswami gives them. And then after that, then he says, okay, now I'll take you to further things. Fourth verse means six ways to associate with the devotees. And then he goes to higher things. But you must master those first three verses. And then your sadhana will be very powerful. The process of bhakti is very powerful. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this. It's like when you shoot an arrow, right? When a powerful warrior shoots an arrow. Just like Arjuna. Arjuna had one bow. What was the name of the bow? Gandiva. And where did he get that bow from? Where did it come from? Agni, yeah. Agni Dev, the fire god, gave it to him. Here is a gift for you. But who did the bow belong to? Varuna, the god of the water. This bow was famous in the universe. It wasn't like some ordinary bow. It was famous. And when Arjuna, he used to shoot an arrow from that bow, that arrow could go for 1 mile straight before it began to dip and go down. So if you get an arrow and you get a bow, right, and then you fire it, how far is it going to go? Yeah, maybe 100 meters or something. Yeah, and then it just goes down. Right? But Arjuna could shoot for 1 mile like a missile straight. And anything which was in between, that arrow just went through it. Now, it's Arjuna's power, the Gandiva, just disappeared, whatever was in front of it. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, bhakti is like that. It's like when you fire an arrow, it just penetrates. Bhakti is extremely powerful. That's why in Kali Yuga, out of the four ages, which is the best? Now, Satya Yuga is very peaceful. Treta Yuga also has many auspicious things. Dwapara Yuga is also. But it says of the four ages, Kali Yuga is the best. Why?
Because we can do bhakti in that and go to the Lord.
Yeah, that's true. You can do bhakti in all the four ages.
But in the four ages, we need to take again birth.
Not necessarily, no. In all the four ages, you can become perfect if you follow the Yuga Dharma. Right? Why is Kali Yuga the best? Yeah, that's the essence of it. Jiva Goswami says, Kali Yuga is the best because everyone's mind is so disturbed, you have to take shelter of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Just look at your life. I'm looking at many of you right now. Because I know many of you. Very well. Not everyone, but I know many of you I know very well. So I know what's going on in your life. And you know what's going on in my life, because you know me quite well, to a degree. So I know the problems you have. Where are those problems coming from? Krishna. Look at him now and say thank you. Because all those problems you have, and I know some of your lives, you've got big problems. They're not like small things, they're big problems. That's actually Krishna. Why is Krishna doing that? Because sometimes we think, why we say it in our head, or when we come, why are you doing this? I can't handle this, it's too intense. No, he's doing that to make you detach from the material energy. That's why Kali Yuga is the best, because it's so disturbed in Kali Yuga. Right? Like in the first canto, it says people are short-lived, ill-advised, irregular, memory is short. It says all the negative qualities of Kali Yuga. And then it says, above all, everyone is always disturbed. Kali Yuga ki? Everyone is always disturbed. Even us. You don't even have to leave your house, you're disturbed. Right? Everyone's disturbed in Kali Yuga. That is Krishna's mercy. Because Krishna is destroying the material attachments. Then you can chant the holy name with a sense of attachment to Krishna. You take shelter of Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Nam Ashraya. Nam Ashraya means you take shelter of the holy name. We have to take shelter of the holy name. Because Kali Yuga, everything is so disturbed, you don't have any choice. What else is there to take shelter of? So this is the power of the Kali Yuga. It is considered the best of ages. Because you have to take shelter of Krishna. And bhakti is so powerful, it is like an arrow. If you take shelter of Krishna, just like these little kids who are taking shelter of Krishna in the temple room. Yes. So in Kali Yuga, if we take shelter of Krishna, bhakti is so powerful, we can so rapidly advance. It's like an arrow, which is shot, it just goes through, and just keeps going until it hits the target. The target is Krishna. It lands at Krishna's feet. So you can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. The process is powerful. But you have to apply yourself to the process. Fully. One lifetime, Prabhupada said. One lifetime. Fully dedicate yourself to the Sankirtan movement. And Prabhupada said you will go back to Krishna. That's how powerful the process is. So there was one pastime, Srila Vyasadeva, up in Bhadrik Ashram, in the Himalaya. Right? So three sages were arguing. Right? And they were arguing, and they said, which yuga is the best? One sage was saying Satya Yuga. One was saying Treta Yuga. One was saying Dwapara Yuga. And then they said, let's go and ask Vyasadeva, see what he says. So they went to Srila Vyasadeva. He was taking bath in the Ganga. So then they came to him, they said, Veda Vyas, please tell us, which age is the best? Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, or Dwapara Yuga? He was taking bath, he went under the water, and then he came up, he said, Kali Yuga. And then he explained to them, Kali Yuga is the best, because we already explained. And then they said, which Varna is the best? Is it Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya? They were all arguing. Which Varna is the best? Is it best to be a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya? So he went underwater, he came up, and he said, Mataji is best. He said, Mataji. He said, to be born as a woman, that is the highest. Why? Because women are uncomplicated. Right? They just love Krishna. You know, men are always, well, you know, is Krishna actually God? You know, is this real? You know, is Krishna the Supreme Person? Am I real? You know, is all this... You know, men complicate the whole thing. Right? Women, they just love Krishna. Vyasadeva said, Mataji is best. To be born as a woman, that is the best. So to be born in Kali Yuga as a Mataji means if you're a Prabhu, that's okay as well. You can still go back to Krishna. But you have to become uncomplicated. Uncomplicated. That's one thing we have to learn from the women, the Matajis. Just love Krishna. Just like my wife and daughter, they just love Krishna. They just love Lord Balaram. They just love Jagannath. If you ask them why, they just look at me and they go, doesn't matter why, I just love them. Yeah, but men have to say, oh, because, you know, they're like this and they're like this and that, you know. And then men have to justify everything philosophically. But women, they just love. That's the tip. So anyone in Kali Yuga, if you just learn to love Krishna, you become perfect. So then they said to Vyasadeva, which ashram is the best? One was saying sannyas, one said vanapras, one said brahmachari. Which is the best? They said, Vyasadeva, which ashram is the best? So he went underwater, he came up, he said, Grihastha is the best. Because without Grihasthas, the whole society shuts down. The vanaprasthas, brahmacharis and sannyasis, right, they only live because of the charity given by the Grihasthas. In Kali Yuga, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Grihastha ashram is a good ashram for Vaishnavas in Kali Yuga. Because everything is so disturbed, everyone's consciousness is so disturbed, very hard to be a brahmachari, a sannyasi, or a vanaprastha. If you can do it, then you know, we bow down to you. Okay. Just like we bow down to the sannyasis. You know, when the sannyasis come, we offer obeisances. Right? And then Prabhupada said, why do we offer obeisances to the sannyasis? The devotees asked Prabhupada, why do we offer obeisances? What did Prabhupada say? Because they have conquered sex desire. Right? If anyone conquers sex desire, we bow down. Because all the grihasthas, we have not conquered sex desire. Therefore, we have to bow. So that is rare in Kali Yuga, that someone becomes that strong. See, like Kadamba Kanan Swami. Any of the sannyasis. But, you know, Kadamba Kanan Swami. He was a grihastha and he became a sannyasi. That's not easy. I knew him when he was a grihastha and then he renounced it. That's not easy. Yeah, I can't do that. So when I see Maharaj, I bow down. I say, you could do it. I could not do it, but you could do it. So I bow down. I offer respect. So Grihastha ashram is considered to be a good ashram in Kali Yuga. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And you see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the Grihastha Acharya. Grihastha Acharya means, how many kids did he have? Yeah, it was like 10 or 12. I can't remember how many. It was 10 or 12. Can you imagine? 10 or 12 kids? Can you imagine? And he was high court judge. And he's a busy person. Like, a lot of responsibility. It wasn't like just some, you know, ordinary person. He had very high responsibility. 10 kids. How did he manage to have 10 kids and still do so much devotional service and still be a high court? Because his wife was empowered. No. Without his wife, he could not have done it. She looked after all the kids. He concentrated on his writing books and devotional service and preaching. But he showed us how to become perfect in Kali Yuga. So your brahmachari, grihastha, sannyasi, that doesn't matter in Kali Yuga. But grihastha is... generally, most people are grihastha. But it's very good in Kali Yuga. No disadvantage. Vyasadeva says to be a mataji, to be a grihastha, and to be in Kali Yuga, This is the best situation. Right? Out of so many lifetimes we've gone through, we've been born so many lifetimes. Actually, right now, it could not be any better. If you want to go back to Krishna, hands up, you want to go back to Krishna. It could not be any better. If you don't take advantage of this, you are a mutha. Mutha means?
Donkey.
Donkey, very good. You are a donkey. You're a donkey. Donkey Maharaj ki. Yeah, if you don't take advantage of this, you are a donkey. It means that there's nothing in there. Nothing. One time Prabhupada said, he was walking with one of his disciples in Vrindavan, and something happened, the whole pastime, and something wrong happened. And Prabhupada looked at him, and he said, yes, because inside your head there is nothing, only cow dung. Only cow dung in there. And Prabhupada was saying to one of his disciples, chastising his disciple, nothing in there, only cow dung. Another time he said to my Guru Maharaj, he said, yes, he made some mistake as well. Prabhupada said, yes, because there's nothing in there. Nothing. So sometimes Prabhupada would be very heavy. So that's what it's like. If we don't take advantage and try to go back to Godhead, nothing is easier, to be honest. We have the most perfect situation to go back to the spiritual world to be with Krishna. It could not be any better. And if we don't take advantage, that means there's nothing in there. Only cow dung. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Can you be more specific?
Like, how to control the mind and then...
Control the mind from what?
From wandering off when you want to chant, and from just to have that attachment mind, just to have that level of peacefulness and calm that will lead to that chanting.
Yeah. You have to read the Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, this question is asked. Where does Arjuna ask this question? Chapter 6? Right? Yeah, somewhere. Somewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. Obviously. But where does he ask? Right? Chapter 6. What is chapter 6 called? Jhana yoga. What does jhana mean? Meditation. What does yoga mean? Connecting, right? So chapter 6 is about the mind. How to control the mind. Hands up if you want to control your mind. Right? Then you have to study chapter 6. It's all in there. How to control the mind. So Arjuna says, he says, Krishna, I'm trying to control my mind, but very difficult. So it just goes like this, all over the place. What do I do? So Krishna gives two instructions. What are the two instructions he gives? Abhyas and Vairagya. Yeah. Abhyas and Vairagya. So your answer is already there. It's in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says two things. How do you control the mind? Abhyas means you have to practice. You said when chanting, then the mind goes all over the place. So practice, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Right? How long have you been chanting for?
10-12 years.
10-12 years. So is it getting easier?
Better.
Is it improving or not improving?
Yes.
Okay, so then that's abhyas. That means practice. It's working. Now if I look back, when I began chanting, it's a lot better now. A lot better. When I began, it was difficult. Not always. I mean, sometimes it's very, but sometimes I remember my mind like screaming at me. You know, like, you know, 6 more rounds to go. At 8 o'clock at night, 6 more rounds to go. And my mind was just doing, you know, like I'm 23 or something. And my mind was like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Are you actually crazy? What are you doing? Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to chant the Maha Mantra and the mind just goes like some crazy person. You know, it doesn't do that these days. Right? Because one thing I've done in my devotional service is the last 15 years I've been to a japa retreat every year. I go to India, right? Holy Name Retreat, Burujan Prabhu, Satchinandan Swami, Mother Jagatarini. So I've been doing this like 15 years, going to these retreats. Very powerful sangha. Very powerful sangha. Right? And it's taught me so many things about cultivating my relationship with the Holy Name. Because Satchinandan Swami says that you have to develop sambandha. Sambandha means relationship. Right? Just like we all know each other, right? There's a relationship, sambandha. Some of us are very close friends. I'm very close to many of you here. Like there's a sambandha, a relationship. Right? How is that formed? Because we get to know each other. Right? You reveal your mind in confidence to me. I reveal my mind in confidence to you. I inquire confidentially. You inquire confidentially. Right? So we get to know each other quite well. And then there's a sambandha, a relationship. And Satchinandan Swami has emphasized over the years, you have to do that with the Holy Name. You have to get to know Krishna. Just like in my sadhana, right? Because, you know, I teach, at the moment I'm teaching the 10th canto. You know? So it means I have to prepare the classes. So part of my sadhana to prepare the classes, I have to read about Krishna. So I'm getting to know him more and more. And even like the last, you know, few weeks, you know, I've been reading about Krishna for years, but I've learned more about him. Even in the last few, I've read some things I've never heard before. Shivaram Swami's books and things I read. I thought, wow. You know, I'm already attracted to Krishna, but now I'm more attracted after I've read these things. So now when I chant, so many things are there. Right? So the Holy Name, so when I'm doing my chanting, it's not like it's not laborious. But it's not at the point now where, you know, I remember years ago, sometimes I chatted just like, my mind was giving me hell. But now it's not like that. So that's a cultivation. That's why Krishna said, abhyas, means cultivate, practice. Develop a relationship with Krishna. And vairagya means you have to become detached. Detachment comes automatically, janayat yashu vairagyam. Gyanam chayat ahoitukam vasudeva bhagavati. First canto, second chapter. Vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yoga priyojita. Janayat yashu vairagyam. Gyanam chayat ahoitukam. Ahoitukam means automatically, naturally. Gyana and vairagya come automatically when you practice bhakti. So we're talking about vairagya. Krishna says you have to become detached. But it doesn't always come automatically. Sometimes, you know, it is becoming, like, you know, I'm more detached from the material world now than I was when I first started practicing Krishna consciousness. But still there is attachment there. So it automatically comes, but also sometimes you have to mechanically put in, just trying to explain it, mechanically have to make adjustments in your life to become detached. Okay, so if you're attached to something, like, you know, me, I'm attached to, like, gulab jamuns. Right? I can't control myself. If I see them, I just eat them. Right? Even if they're on someone else's plate, I'll just eat them. Right? And I'm not even ashamed. Like, I just do it. I don't have any control. So I have to know, right, in my life, if I want to get back to Krishna, I have to stay away from them a lot of the time. Right? Because if they're around me all the time, it's going to be a big impediment. So that's like a vairagya. It's a detachment. Mechanically, I have to do it. Right. And sometimes, like, I'm at the temple, and some manager says, "Oh, Prabhu, I cook something for you." And I said, "Oh, nice." And then they give you, "Oh, no." Not them. Yeah. Anything else, that's okay. You know, I'll give it to someone else or something like that. But when it's them, it's like, "Oh, yeah, Krishna. Don't eat my dad's stuff." You know, meditating. But they consume my consciousness. So by vairagya, you have to sometimes detach yourself from things. So Krishna says these two things, practice and detachment. And then your mind will come under control. Okay. You want to add anything? Okay.
Yeah. So you were saying that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was really glorifying the Grihastha ashram.
Yeah.
But his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was so heavy on the Grihasthas.
No, not really.
No.
Most of his disciples were Grihasthas. He had 60,000 disciples. So you can't say he was heavy on Grihasthas because he initiated 60,000. But he was very powerful himself as a sannyasi, and he established many sannyasis and many brahmacharis as well. But he showed a different path, that's all. The point is, if you can remain brahmachari and if you can take sannyas, then do it. I tried. I would, to be honest, I wouldn't like to be a sannyasi. I'd like to be sitting here right now with a danda. Honestly, I would. I'd love to be sitting here with a danda. It'd be easy because I like to give classes. But that's the service that I like the best. If I had a danda, right, anywhere I go, just, you know, give class, I could do it all the time. Right? And I tried. So if you can be a brahmachari and a sannyasi, yeah, fantastic. Hare Krishna. It's wonderful. But in general, 99% of the Vaishnava population, that would be Grihastha. So, to be honest, it really doesn't matter. To be honest, it really doesn't matter. What's important is the quality of your chanting. Right? So, if you can do it from the platform, you know, the famous pastime is in the 8th canto of Gajendra. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the famous pastime to which we, to understand these points. So, you know, if you can chant better, for me, I chant better in the Grihastha ashram. Because if I try to be artificially renounced, I end up thinking of women anyway. Right? So better that I sit in the ashram, which is better for me, and then my chanting is better. For others, it's better they stay in the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Grihastha, Sannyasa ashram. And then they'll chant better from that platform. So it really doesn't matter which ashram you're in. Krishna doesn't say anywhere that you can't go back to Godhead. Right? If you're in this ashram or this ashram or this ashram. He says in the 3rd chapter of the Gita, he said, do not be michacha. Michacha means a pretender. Right? So, okay, you're in the sannyas ashram, but you're chanting and you're thinking of women, then what's the point? It's all external. If you're in the grihastha ashram, you're chanting and you're just thinking of your the wife or the husband or man or women, what's the point? You're just absorbed in the material energy. You're not transcending. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, I think at the end of the 12th chapter, Prabhupada says, even in the Grihastha ashram, you have to be careful that your mind does not become attached to other women. You're married, you have a wife, but still, the mind is so powerful, you become attached to other women, even when you're married. Prabhupada said you have to be careful of that. That's how tricky mind is. Minus a